case of the unpaid yeshiva tuition. Everybody see that? Okay, so hop into the source sheet. And now you should see here, I gave us a brief summary of the facts. I like this case very much. And I'll tell you what the halachic legal principles are. I actually want to write up this case. So if you have thoughts on it, you help me direct.
Is this real?
Yeah. It's a real case. I changed some of the facts for you so that it wouldn't compromise the identity of the people. But here are the background facts of the case. And you'll see it's generalizable to all sorts of scenarios, not unique to yeshiva tuition. So, a father sends his son to yeshiva in Israel for Shana Aleph. Ma'isim b'chol yom. Happens all the time. The yeshiva says they charge $24,000 for Shana Aleph tuition. Ma'isim b'chol yom. Right? Every yeshiva wants to rip you off. But the yeshiva says, we're going to give you a discount for 50%. That's what they tell this father. So right off the bat, they're reducing his liability, the contract, from $24,000 to?
They said, no, it's 50%? Or?
They said, we're giving you a discount for 50%.
$12,000.
Why they do that? Maybe they were trying to recruit. Maybe this guy didn't have enough money.
Scholarship.
Son attends yeshiva for the year. Now, the father pays about half of the $12,000. He didn't pay the full amount for Shana Aleph. Some of his checks bounced. He was supposed to apply for financial assistance from Masa. You guys know what Masa is?
Yeah. Like
that. He didn't do that. This is a whole part of the Dentura. I'm not going to get it. It's not really relevant for the legal thing I want to discuss today. But background fact is that he didn't pay the full amount of Shana Aleph either. Okay. Now the son wants to return to yeshiva for Shana Bet. It's the minog, right? Stay for Shana Bet. So yeshiva turns to the father and they give him a contract that says we charge $22,000 for Shana Bet, but we're so generous we're going to give you a $2,000 discount. So effectively they're asking for how much for Shana Bet?
$20,000.
Right, they're giving a $2,000. It's all written out here on the source sheet. So they're giving the father a $2,000 scholarship, right? So remember, for Shana Aleph, they ask for $12,000, Sach HaKol, after the scholarship. For Shana Bet, they're asking for much more than that. They're asking for $20,000, Sach HaKol, after the scholarship, right? It's absurd, you said? It's a lot. So the father doesn't sign the contract. Now, in his discussions with the yeshiva, before he sends his son, he tells them that he won't pay $20,000, and they'll have to work out the financial aid. The father tells them. What does that mean? So this is a major issue in ascertaining the facts with them. Like when they're telling their story, you have to figure out as a dayanim, figure out what exactly happened. So the yeshiva says, the father never got back to us. He stonewalled us. The father says, like, no, I told him from the beginning, like, no way am I going to pay $20,000. We'll have to work it out. So we have to make a factual assessment about what actually happened. Our assessment was that basically there was some negotiation where the father said, no way am I paying $20,000.
Right away?
Well, right? Yeah, pretty much right away. Certainly before the son went. And then, the understanding was they'll have to work it out. They'll have to figure out some amount, and they never did. But there was kind of a meeting of the minds, this is important, that they would have to
work it out.
Which is not crazy, right? It's not uncommon.
But it's just weird that yeshiva would let his kid go when the dad already owed $6,000.
Good, yeah.
So this is entirely on the yeshiva.
Okay, maybe. The yeshiva appears to acknowledge this.
Maybe he was right.
Not so posh.
It's on them for not sacking up.
Maybe.
Presumably leaving for the summer. It's not like he's staying. Like there's a time when he's not there when the yeshiva can say, maybe don't come back.
Sure. Part of the thing here was the father said that the kid was going to go on a trip to Europe in the middle, and the yeshiva locked up his passport, and they're like, we're not giving you your passport until you pay the tuition that you owe. And I guess some yeshivas, they want, like, you put it in the safe or something. All right. So, in our assessment, the yeshiva acknowledged this, and there was they're like, okay, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, that alone is ridiculous.
Now, this is the yeshiva made attempts to follow up with the father, but was never able to get through to him. He ignored their phone calls. He ignored their emails. So that's, the yeshiva did make an attempt to say, come on, like, we want to get paid. We want to figure out. He ignores them. Father doesn't make any payments towards Shanabet. Several months later, the yeshiva brings the father to Din Torah. They want to recover the unpaid tuition for Shanabet and the balance on Shana Aleph.
Who's representing the yeshiva?
They're Rosh Hashiva. Yeah, they're Rosh Hashiva.
Yeah.
The yeshiva claims they want 22K for Shanabet and the 6K remaining for Shana Aleph. I'm not going to say. So they want 28K, right? 22.
I thought they agreed on 25.
No, so they said, we offered him a $2,000 discount for Shanabet. Now that he didn't agree to it, we want the full amount. That's our tuition contract price. That's that's in the form that we send out. Everyone gets aggressive in litigation. So the yeshiva got aggressive, and look at the father got aggressive also. What did he say?
Israel, right?
Israel, yeah, yeshiva in Israel. The father claims that he's not obligated to pay a penny for Shanabet. Number one, never signs the contract. Yeah, so this is very important. He says, I never signed the contract, so I don't owe you a penny. And number two, he says the program fell apart and was virtually non-existent. So what happened here is that basically his son ended up being the only guy left in Shanabet.
After Elul.
After
Elul.
So the yeshiva basically was like, you know, trying to get the Shanabet program going. And, you know, they like, don't worry, your friends will be here. And he had like four friends who came for Elul. I guess the yeshiva thought they would all stay, but then the four friends decided they were going to leave. So this guy was the only one left in Shanabet for...
the same time he decided to stay.
Well, 100%. He decided to stay. So the father says, I'm not paying you a penny for Shanabet. And the yeshiva's like, we want 22K.
That's you stayed the whole year.
The son stayed the whole year. Stayed the whole year.
The yeshiva's getting money back
for
COVID.
Well, this is well before COVID.
But in COVID, when people left in March...
Did yeshivas get money back? Did they refund
money?
I don't know. It might depend on the yeshiva. I don't know. I should know what the yeshiva did. Does everybody see the facts? This is the dispute. It's a very interesting case, right? Classic case. A dispute between two parties. There's no clear written contract about the amount. Nothing signed. Our achrayus in the case is to figure out how much is the yeshiva entitled to? How much is the father obligated to pay? Okay? It's a neat. Cool case. No? Okay, so what are the different ways of thinking about this? So one of the dayanim on the case said, I know how to approach this. We're going to treat this as a case of yorid. Yorid, if you remember, is a principle in halacha.
It's not exactly
that. I'll tell you why. But you wanted to say this is a case of yorid. What's yorid? Yorid is a case where there's no contract, no agreement, but somebody goes ahead and confers a benefit upon you. Anybody have a marker by any chance? Somebody confers a benefit upon you. It's fine. That's the idea of yorid. In halacha, you're obligated to pay for the benefit that you received, even if you didn't contract for the benefit. So the classic cases that I think we discussed at the beginning of the year is, you know, those guys who come and clean your windshield, and then they want like a dollar for cleaning your windshield. If they in fact provided you with a valuable service, maybe you have a duty to give them a dollar. The Gemara talks about cases where somebody, Babasra cases, the Gemara talks about cases where somebody comes into your property and they landscape for you. They cut your grass, they trim your hedges, they fertilize the grass, they de-weed. So you're in principle chayiv to pay them if they conferred a valuable benefit. I told you my story that when I went to Hawaii for a winter break, and I came back. My plants, it had snowed here in January. Yeah. These guys came and they snowplowed. I didn't ask them to do it, but they were the guys who plowed for the previous owners of my house. So they just like came and they sent a bill. Right? So, you know, I was enjoying the Hawaiian sun, and these guys want like $300 for, you know, shoveling the snow away.
What was the bill when you earned it? Or just the
The bill was to my name. They do other work for me. They do landscaping for me. But I never hired them to do the snow removal. I paid it. Of course I paid it. They come for service. Yeah, for service.
Why do you say
of course paid it? Yeah, they provided it. Because they provided me the valuable service.
What about the fence?
Was it valuable for you?
Yeah, because the neighbors get upset if your walk is not... Well, if you would have done it yourself, yeah, but here I was away and I would never want to shovel myself. if I don't have to. I don't know, I don't want to pay $150, you know, per visit, but of these guys. But anyways, does everybody understand the basic legal principle? So the idea is that in halacha, you don't need a contract to be entitled to pay. What's sufficient is that you provide a valuable service to somebody. Why exactly that should be the basis for remuneration, is you right there, Kobe? Yeah. Why that should be the legal basis for remuneration is very intriguing. I'll just point out that it's not, we as Americans oftentimes assume that a contract is the only basis for being entitled to compensation, but it's not obvious that that's true. Maybe the mere fact that you conferred a valuable benefit on somebody else is a sufficient reason that you're entitled to be paid. You did a good, you conferred value, that's a commodifiable thing. Usually in American law, you need a contract, but there are special cases where you don't. Like, for example, if you pass out or something and an ambulance picks you up, if you didn't request the ambulance service, but they could probably send you a bill under the law because...
Is that an emergency?
What?
Is that an emergency?
An emergency, yeah. They could send you a bill, even if you don't have insurance, because they provided you with a valuable service, right? So it's worth thinking about the underlying... You can also think about this from a law and economics perspective, like... Maybe it's good to incentivize people to go ahead and shovel people's snow because then all the walks get cleared, and just like maybe a more efficient way than making people contract people to do it. But
in this case, there was a contract and you said Simon.
In this yeshiva case. Yeah. Okay, very good. So we'll talk about that in a second. But here's the theory of Yorid. So here's the Gemara about Messiah Kavalev. Itmar, Yorid, the Toh Sada Chaver, but not the Shalom Bershus. I go into your property and I plant it, I landscape it. Without permission. So Machlokas in Rav and Shmuel, exactly how to quantify the Yorid's compensation. Rav says you give him Yad al Tachtona, which means the lesser of either his costs or the value he conferred on your property. And Shmuel says, you know, you just look for the going market rate of that service, and you pay him whatever the going market rate is. But you see, everyone in the Gemara agrees that there's some entitlement for compensation because you are Nana.
What if you simply can't afford it?
What?
What if you simply just can't afford it?
So we'll talk about a complicated case like that in a moment.
So
let me just give you the halacha's principle here in Choshen Mishpat Reish Lamech Dalet Dalet. Shulchan Aruch here says, anytime somebody does a pu'ula or toba for their neighbor, for their friend, lo yuchal lomar lo b'china masisa imadi hov lo tzivisicha. We don't say we assume it's a gift. We don't assume it's a present. Elatzarch li'den oskara. By default, you got to pay the guy for the service. Kind of the opposite of how we think in America. By default, the thought is that you got a benefit. You have a duty to pay. Okay. So this Dayan said, what went on here maybe is a case of Yorid. The yeshiva didn't have a contract, but they provided a service. They educated the child. They gave him room and board. Good. Does everybody hear the suggestion at least? She said, we have to quantify what's the value of the benefit that the yeshiva conferred. That was his argument. We should treat this as a Yorid case.
No one's finally expecting to stay for free.
What?
They were expecting that their child would stay for free.
The dad? Yeah. Seems like it. It's pretty crazy, but...
He's
trying to get away with that, 100%. It's not so nice, right? Okay, so I want to explain why I think that this approach is wrong. For three reasons, yeah.
How much is the father?
Yonah.
Your name. How much does the father want? Like, what's his argument? He wants to pay
zero. Zero. He said, I never signed the contract. And
what
is Shana Aleph?
He said, there's his money there.
Yeah, I don't know what is Shana Aleph. His claim for zero is really Shana Bet.
He's not being sued for Shana Aleph, right?
What?
He's not being sued for Shana Aleph, right?
Who? The daddy is? No, the yeshiva wants, they want their $6,000 for Shana Aleph also.
And what's his argument for that?
His argument is that the yeshiva really should have applied for financial assistance on his behalf to Masa and things like that. And
what's the job with the trip to Europe? They wanted for that.
Yeah, it's a little sure. Yeah, 100%. You can see why the yeshiva wanted to lock up the passport.
We actually went to Europe.
The kid, yeah. Yeah.
That was a real part of the story.
Real part of the story. I didn't make up any... I changed like just the names. You know, I took out the names. But I changed the amounts a little bit. But
if we say Yorid and say that, you know, the fact that there was no contract doesn't matter, we still don't charge the dad the full $22,000. The basin has to come up with like a new amount.
Yeah, you have to figure out what's the value of the benefit that the yeshiva conferred.
That's a Yorid, no?
Well,
that's
actually going with this.
Well, you hold by your rate. Yeah, the question is it the right legal principle to apply to this case? Yeah. So I'm going to say no. This is my argument to the day on end. To the other two day on end. One of them said your rate initially. And I, well, I'm not going to say who. But I want to say why I think your rate's wrong. So three reasons. Maybe two, but I want to make 3 points. Point number one. If you look at the Shulchan Aruch here that I'm highlighting in Choshe Mishpat Siman Shin Lamed Hei, there's actually machlokas whether you could apply Yorid to Talmud Torah. So let's say I take Saul and I teach him something. Kidnap Saul and I teach him Torah. I can't then go to his parents and say, you got to pay me for my services for being Mahana Saul. Why? Presumably this is because this Chuvas Arashba explains that Talmud Torah is really supposed to be for free. Like Moshe Rabbeinu taught Torah for free. Mani b'chinam, aftam b'chinam. So you can't say that the Torah that I taught you is now something that I'm entitled to be compensated for ex post facto.
Also.
We'll get to that in a second. Good. We'll get to that in a second. But for example, let's say Columbia guys come to YU and they sit in on YU Shirim. So I think in principle, YU cannot turn to them after the fact and say, you benefited from our Torah teaching, you owe us a bill. Right? You got to pay us. Because in principle, you have a duty to teach Torah for free. If you enter into a contract with the Chatzchila and somebody agrees to pay you, fine. You could talk about whether it's author or usher, whether it's mutter, but fine. The legal obligation arose by consent, by kinyan, by contract. In a case of yored, where you're just going along and you're providing the service without an agreement, it's not obvious that you have a right to say that I provided a commodifiable benefit that I'm entitled to be compensated for it. So you can see here in the Shulchan Aruch, Hamelamed in Ben Chaver Shalomi Da'asa'av. Right, so you go over to Kid and Shul and you start teaching him the parsha or something. Some Rishonim say you're entitled to be compensated like Yorid. Unbelievable view, no? The Rashba disagrees. He says you can't do it because of this idea that you're not entitled to be compensated for Torah teaching. Now, that's his Gemara and Dharm Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. That it's not the type of thing you should be compensated for. Now, you're right. Who mentioned Rumen Bor? Rumen Bor. You're right that probably there was still a benefit the yeshiva conferred by Rumen Bor, food, trips, etc. But then that would cut down the amount that the father would have to pay, right? He wouldn't have to pay the full tuition amount. It would literally be like the fair market value of a room and board food trips.
Yeah.
So presumably that's significantly less than the 22,000 the yeshiva is asking for. Right? I think when we explored this idea, it would have been something like $14,000 or $13,000. Like significantly less than...
$14,000 for just the room and
for
board.
Just for Shana Bet, yeah.
They're giving
him a major discount for Shana Aleph
already. For Shana Aleph,
correct. So the $6,000 for Shana Aleph, that's like not in dispute.
Right now, yeah. I'm not talking about the $6,000. Well, I'm just talking about Shana Bet right now.
A ton of other problematic issues, though.
Well, does everybody see the first issue with Yorid?
Yeah.
So it's questionable whether Yorid would apply to Torah teaching, but you're right that there's definitely a room and board thing that's recoverable under a doctrine of Yorid. Let me just give the other two objections. Objection number two, it's not an objection, but it just means something you have to deal with in Yorid. If we were to analyze this through Yorid, who would be chayav to pay?
The dad.
The son.
The dad or the son?
The son.
So who got the benefit? Right. So I think there's an argument that really the son is a gadol. The son is he's a big boy. Who's the one who got the benefit of the education?
The
kid's a big kid. He's a big kid. The father's in the mechuyav when the kid's 17 years old.
Yeah.
Well, it's because you guys are spoiled Americans still living off your parents, you know.
So maybe,
it's not pasha though. It's really not pasha. This Dayan who didn't like, who wanted to go Yorid, he's like, well, you could say the minog is for a parent to pay their kids' expenses. But that's not obvious.
I mean,
if you go to a restaurant and you eat from the restaurant, so you get enough. You think your parents are mechuyev to pay the bill?
I mean, someone.
Well, someone. Who you are, because you benefited, no?
But why
so just same here. The kid went to the yeshiva. It's not obvious that the father is the one who's liable to pay.
And the kid's liable.
Okay, so we had an arbitration agreement. We had a shtaviruim between us and between the yeshiva and the father. We could say the wrong parties are here. The father's patur. That's good, right? The father's patur. Yeah, the father's patur. But now go sue the kid and see if you could get money from him. But as a formal matter, if you're talking about Yorid, Lechora, the son, is the one who received the benefit. And it's hard to connect the dots back to the father.
Why was this in the beginning here?
There's some benefit the father's getting.
Right? I don't know, yeshiva probably has a merit.
The only benefit the father's getting is the financial benefit of not paying.
Right. But he's also
right, the real benefit is the son, right. Right, so we should have said, if it's Yorid, then you got to sue the son.
She was falling back on the contract. And they didn't hold up their end of the contract.
But the contract was never signed.
Okay, but then why would he sign it? Why would the father be signed at all? He wouldn't be.
So this Diane wanted to say, we're going to go with Yorid. Yorid is non-contractual.
Right.
So we have to figure out how much the yeshiva would be remunerated for the benefit they conferred. But then my point is, the benefit they conferred is on the son, not the father. Right?
What about a 13-year-old boy? Do the same thing.
So it's a 13-year-old is a Shiloh.
But
an 18-year-old is...
He's never been in school his whole life. He's only
18.
What?
On the regular case, he's not $20,000.
That's true, right. So they'd probably have a lot of trouble collecting for
him.
That's the Yeshiva standard.
And a Hanami.
What if it's a Shariah?
If who's a Shariah?
Is a Shariah.
But I think the point here is, if the doctrine is that the Yeshiva was Mahana someone, who are they Mahana? The father or the kid? I think it's the kid. So we... Yeah, this did Torah's over. The father's patur. Sue the son now.
Maybe.
Sue your Talmud.
It's the father's responsibility to teach the son.
Not when he's 18.
No, maybe.
No?
If the son was
home. Right? The kid's a gadol.
13.
13?
Let's
say 13, yeah.
So 13, you'd say it's not the father's obligation.
Maybe.
The anymore?
Yeah.
But if the son was home.
Right.
If the son was home, the father left the table only expected for that year.
If what?
If the son was at home.
Why would he have to? Maybe the father would be volunteer to. Maybe this kid should be independent. That's what I'm saying. Just because some people are living off their parents doesn't mean everyone's living off their parents. My parents still pay for my cell phone, as crazy as it is. It's on my family plan. They're not mechuyev to. They're just very generous, and you know, I just got away with, you know, being on their plan all these years. It's not their chiyuv. Right?
Did you ever remind them that they're still paying?
No, they know. Because especially when I was in Israel and the $10 a day for Verizon. My mother's like, you're in Israel? What? Nah, she knows. She knows what's going on. Well, right. So there's one thing. Maybe you could say minog. Then you have to go in this community where they're from. Is it true that there's a minog that parents pay for all their kids' expenses? Yeah. It's not so
pasha. The assumption is with the Jew that like the kid was never going to like that was never happening. The kid was going to
pay. That's what this Diane was saying, right? That's a minog type argument, right? The minog is that the parents will pay, but it's hard to append minog to this claim of yorid. That's my point. So let's get to the third objection.
But even then, it's because the kid is supposed to
pay. What? Just because the kid is supposed
to pay, that should affect the whole thing.
Worse, we have an arbitration agreement. We have a shtar berurim. I mean, the kinyan that was done to the bezdin was between the father and the yeshiva. So, if the kid's chayev, we would say we have to close this din Torah down. The father is patur, and then you got to sue the son and see if
you use
yorid.
What? It's only if you use yorid.
If you use yorid, correct. Now, let me give you the third problem with yorid. Problem number three is that it's just conceptually wrong. Why is it conceptually wrong? Because what is yorid? Yorid is a case when you go rogue. Yorid is when I'm away in Hawaii and somebody comes and shovels the snow without my consent, without consulting me. Right? They ask.
He's forcing himself.
What?
He's forcing himself.
Correct.
The kid
Correct.
To the yeshiva.
Oh, really good point.
Here it's very different. Like here it's very different. The father spoke to the yeshiva. He wanted to send his son there. The yeshiva spoke to him. They wanted the son to come to them. They accepted the son. So really what happened here is that there was a contract, but we just don't know what the price was. Meaning, there was a meeting of the minds.
There's an agreement.
Exactly. There's a kinyan. There's an agreement. there's one piece of the agreement that's missing, the price.
Okay.
So the idea is that conceptually, your rate is for a case where there's no agreement. It's non-contractual. That's what your rate's about.
Here's just not a written agreement.
Exactly. Here, there is an agreement. There's a meeting of the minds for the kid to go to yeshiva, for the yeshiva to accept the kids. The father knew the kid was going. Well, and even went. There's just one aspect of the kinyan, there's one aspect of the agreement that is ambiguous, that's not fleshed out. And then we have to figure out how to flesh it out. Does everybody see that?
Yeah.
Let me see if I could give you a
what was the father's reasoning in arbitration for not paying the bills?
He had two reasons. Number one, I never signed.
No,
he literally said I never signed.
No, what I'm saying, not that. I'm saying why did he not want to pay? Not because he didn't sign. Like, did he give a reason that he didn't have money? Or
is it because the trip to Europe is too expensive?
Well, he also said he thought it was just a bad program. So I guess he felt justified.
Yeah, he also said the program wasn't so good.
The yeshiva ended in Elul. I mean, that's ridiculous.
What?
The yeshiva itself ended in, like...
It didn't end. It just said his friends,
Were there other kids in the program, or was it just his friends left, or was it really no one else in Shanabed except him?
Yeah. It was a one-man Shanabed operation.
Is this yeshiva still, like, up and running?
I believe so.
The problem is if he gives us the hints, it's not like it's going to be super easy to find the kid, because he's the only kid.
Does everybody agree? Everybody see the analysis about the concept of your rate is not the right concept here?
Is it considered a contract if no words said?
What? If no words were said?
It's on when, it's
yeah. So I'll give you an example. Let me see if I can give you a good example from Schopenhauer. Let me just summarize so we don't lose sight of where we are. So again, one Dayan said we should treat this as your rate. Your rate is this idea about somebody goes and confers benefits without a contract, they're entitled to be remunerated for some amount. There are three considerations to think about if you go that way. Number one is there your rate for Talmud Torah? Right, so Gavin's saying, okay, but room and board. Consideration number two is your rate here, who got the benefit, the son or the father? Arguably, it's the son, in which case it's outside of the jurisdiction of the Beis Din for the Shkavri Ruin, for the jurisdiction they have in the Kinyan. And consideration number three is that conceptually, your rate is about when there's no meeting of the minds, and somebody acts in a rogue and unilateral manner to impose, to confer a benefit on somebody else, that's different from a case where you hired a worker and the worker wanted to work for you, you just didn't figure out the price that you're going to pay him. Right? Mashal ma'adavar doma. Let's say a parent left a kid in the playground and you say, oh, I'm going to go out and watch that kid. And then you want to be paid for that. That's your rate. That's different from a case where a parent calls you up and says, Saul, come babysit for my kid while I go out to a movie tonight,
and you just didn't agree on the price.
And you just forgot to just negotiate the price. Those are very different cases. In one case, there's a contract, just you have to figure out the unspecified term. And in the other case, there's no contract at all. That's the chiluk. So my point is that conceptually, your rate is not the right. And I just want to say, in halacha, there are clear cases
of
this idea where you have a contract without price. So I'll give you an example. Let me see this example. Here. Second. Etcetera. What's hard to follow? Oh, sorry. Four. Look at page 4. The Piskei Choshen just says this nicely. You could reconstruct this from earlier Makoros. L'chatchila yikva imapoel tanai ho'avoda v'sha'os avoda. L'chatchila, when you hire somebody, you should specify all the terms. The hours, the schar. If you fail to specify, then you're locked in to minog. What? Whatever minog is, yeah, whatever is normal. But the point is, you could have a contract that leaves out terms. That's the idea. You fill it in based off minog. Okay. So my point is that this case is more analogous to this rather than your rate.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody agree to that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
I think reading words. Is there a concept like when there's like, let's say, two opinions? You could, like, somebody could say, like, I think it's called, like, keenly, like, you could, like, establish.
Yeah, I hold like this. Yeah.
Yeah. So can somebody do that with, like, Mr. Rashba and say that, like, he holds that there's no such thing as your when it comes to
Kimley is a hugely interesting question. Kimley? You familiar with the concept? Kim Lee Vajamini is a different issue. Kim Lee is a concept of Dine Mominis because of Motzmei Chaver al Haraya. If there are different legal opinions, maybe the defendant could always say, I hold like this view that's favorable to him, if it's not a settled halacha. So like if there are 2 days in the Shechar Arach, could he have the advantage of saying, I hold like the view that's favorable to me? Complicated. Most Bate Din don't allow Kim Lee.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of Bate Din have it in their like arbitration agreement that you waive your right to Kim Lee. Because then it becomes it becomes almost impossible, you know?
Aren't you selecting one of the three rabbis?
Here you have all three rabbis. Like here, this.
Here
you're not selecting.
Party selecting one. The other
no, here
one.
They all come to the Bezin, and the Bezin selects the panel. Yeah, it's not a Zabla. Okay.
So what about there is certain chiyuv from the father towards the son? Kiddushin molo if like he has to.
But yeah, but not when the kid's already a gadol and.
Lisa Isha. Pay for the husband.
I don't know. Is the father of a chiv to pay for his son's tuition when the kid, when the kid's 18 years old, or not? No.
Well, isn't there something that a dad has an obligation to teach his son Torah? So if the yeshiva teaches his kid Torah, they're acting like.
Yeah. When does that obligation expire?
Older people, is that what it used to be?
That's what that Diane was saying. He was saying, there's a minog here that the parents still cover.
Right.
Like,
I think in the United States, you can still be on your parents' health insurance until you're 26.
Obamacare, of course.
Yeah,
not everyone does. Not healthcare, but in terms of just stuff.
Yeah, some people are independent. You know, some people's parents pay for their college. Some people take out loans. And you can't just go to college and sue your parents and say you're mechuyev to teach me Torah, so you got to pay for my YU tuition. And you could try it, but it's not obvious that you could win on that argument. That you know, the Mishnah says they're mechuyev to teach Torah, so they got to pay for outrageous YU tuition. No. Okay, so those are reasons to not go with Yuri. One second. Let me then say the next major issue that comes up in this case. I want to say that this Dayan was convinced by my arguments that Yuri is the wrong way to go. So we moved away from that. Okay?
You sat on this case?
Yeah. It's one of my early cases. I'm very proud of it.
How does this work?
A lot of deliberations. Because not even in the hearing. It's sometimes in the hearing you step out, you talk about it. Because in the hearing, you want to get all the facts that are necessary. But then you could deliberate for weeks afterwards, you know, trying to figure out what's the right thing to apply. So that was in this case. A lot of post-hearing deliberations.
Will you guys all just sit down in the room?
Yeah, sometimes in a room, sometimes a conference call.
Do you invite them for tea? How does it work?
The other day on it?
Do you have to be like a basement?
For the deliberations afterwards? No, sometimes just on the
phone. Where is the
Bezin America? Bezin America is in Midtown. And then they have an office. They have a...
So it's just like a conference room?
No, it's nice. It's nice.
You can say a courtroom.
It's like a nice. Yeah, it's got like a table set up for got one table. It's nice.
It's like a day.
Do you guys decide based on one aid if you think it's right?
One aid.
Yeah, like
it's complicated. Like, hold off on these. I don't want to get distracted from the case here. So the next issue to determine was there agreement on price?
Was they were both just misled?
Was there agreement on price? Meaning. So Prashana Alpha, I think for sure. But what are Prashana Bet? So here's one argument. Maybe the yeshiva gave the father a contract for 20K, right? 22 minus 2,000 with the scholarship. And, you know, the father maybe grumbled at them and said, no way. But maybe if that was the last concrete number that was thrown around, maybe that's what it is.
You could have said, I mean,
if he didn't negotiate something
no basis
different,
to use that number simply because they said it.
Okay, true, good. So here's the. I want to call your attention to the Tosefta that I'm highlighting on page 4. Tosefta Kiddushin Perek Beis. Everybody see that?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what Tosefta says. Ze Omer B'Maneh.
What page now?
Page 4. Do you not see it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm highlighting. You can click on my. Face, no? Well?
It works.
Zeh Omer B'Manah, Zeh Omer B'Masayim. So you have parties negotiating over a sale of some asset. The seller says he wants 200. The buyer says, I'll pay 100. And there's no meeting of the minds, like Hamas's negotiations with Israel. And everyone walks away from Qatar without an agreement. So each party goes away. And then one party says, you know what, let's do it. So what's the price?
Whatever the other party said.
So that's exactly. Im halokeach tavas amocher. If the buyer is the one who then turned around and said, let's do it. Yasu divrei mocher. He's considered to have agreed to the seller's price.
Right, it's on the yeshiva, so we'll work it out.
1 second. The Tosefta rule is whoever comes back to the table is considered to have agreed to the other person's price.
Right. So
1 second. So good.
Good.
Yeah. So imagine a case where the yeshiva said we want 20K and the father said no, 10K. Right. Let's say that's what happened. So then we would have to figure out, did the father drive his kid to the airport and say, okay, you know, go to the yeshiva? Or did the yeshiva, like, send the bus to pick up the kid?
Kidnapper.
Right? Or the yeshiva say, okay, come. Like, when do you come? Meaning, who made the first move? Doesn't have to be who sent to the airport, but, like, did the yeshiva say...
The yeshiva reaching out
said... Let's say the father said 10, the yeshiva said 20, right?
Yeah.
And then the yeshiva said, sent a letter saying, we're so excited to see you. Like, 2 months go by, and they say, we're so excited to see you in El. Then maybe that's the yeshiva accepting the father. But if the father then said... tell me when the flight is, right? I gotta book a cab. Then maybe that's the father agreeing to the yeshiva.
It was
price.
Like pretty equal. It sounds like they'll work it out.
Good. So this is the Tosefta rule. I just want to point out that the Tosefta rule is paskin in the Shulchan Aruch and Simin Reish Kaf Aleph Kloshim Mishpat in the context of buying merchandise. Is that relevant to this case?
Well, there's no price.
Oh, good. So. Yosef's right. This case is not that. Right? So look here at the Pesach Choshen. Look what he writes. Amar lo ha-poel sherotza bischaru kach v'kach. So the yeshiva is the poel here, right? They're providing the service. They say we want 22K or 20K. But amar lo balabayis nispasher b'neinu. And the father says, you know what? We'll work it out. We'll come to some sort of settlement in between. Like a pshara. What's the din? Harezek ilu lo hisnu kal al aschiros. It's as if there's no price at all that's been agreed upon. So then you go to Minah. Like we said, we'll go to that in a second. But notice here, and the Pesach Choshen points out in the footnote, this is distinguishable from the case of the Tosefta, where each side has a price, they walk away, and then one side comes back. What's the difference between the cases? So it seems to me the difference is...
only one side.
Well,
only one side, no?
Right, but why is that important? It's important because when each party has a clear offer, a clear number, and then somebody about faces, so we could say you accepted the other side's offer. But here is a clear, number one, there's no clear counter offer in this case. But more importantly, it's analogous to saying nispasher b'neinu, meaning we both know that it's not going to be your price, it's not going to be my price. It's going to be something in the middle. So agreeing to meet in the middle is different from not agreeing and leaving each side's insistence on the table.
Can you quantify that?
Quantify what?
Quantify
what it is?
In the middle?
Well,
like
no.
In the middle.
No. The din is that if they say we're going to meet in the middle, then it's as if there's no agreement on price at all. And you have to figure out what happened. Well,
if they say meet in the middle, it's as if there's no agreement?
Exactly. That's the lush. Look here at the Pesach Choshen. Amar lo apol sherotzu bischaru kach v'kach. Amar lo balabayis nispasher b'neinu. Harei zekil lo hisnu kal al aschiros. What's the din of lo hisnu kal al aschiros? We saw it before. You follow. What do you follow?
Minog.
Exactly, minog. So look at that din in... let me give you an example. What? Yeah, he's a very... I like the Pesach Choshen a lot. He passed away recently. He was a dying on the Eich Haredes. He's become a chacham. He wrote this. His name is Rabbi Yaakov Blau. Bloy. But he wrote this treatise that's like a restatement of Choshen Mishpat, kind of like the Rambam did for the Gemara. He took the Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat and made it into like more cleanly stated principles. So it's like a very nice, it's very like good work to use. Just one second. So look here at the din of, see if I can find it. Yeah. So here's a Pesach Choshen again. Lechat in Perek Zayin. Lechat chila yikva mapoel tnai hu avoda b'shal sabod. Vim lo kava harei hu noe gimo ki minaga medina. Right, if you don't come to an agreement on price, what do? Minaga medina. And he also says, if you say nispasher b'neinu, that's kilu lo hisnu klal. So what should you do? Should minaga medina. Oh. Good. So I just want to point out, so we rejected Yorid. Why? Because really over here, there is a meeting of the minds for the kid to go to yeshiva. Correct? Was there a meeting on price? So according to the Tosefta, you might say maybe, and you should look to see who made the first move, right? But then you realize that Tosefta is not really the right rule, right? Because the Tosefta is a case where each side has a number, and one side then agrees to the other. But that's not what's going on here. So our case is like Nispasher Binenu. In a case of Nispasher Binenu, where each side is saying we're going to do some sort of compromise, which we understood to be the equivalent of when they said, we'll work it out. So then it's as if there's no agreement. And what happens when there's no agreement? Minaga Medina. And that's basically in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat, Shin Lamed Aleph, basically says that whenever you have an ambiguous provision in a contract, you go after Mina. Well, oh, we don't know yet.
Is Israel, is America?
Let's figure it out. So we'll get there in a second.
How could it be America?
Because
many money.
Because dollars. Sometimes it's tax deductible, whatever tuition you pay, and other tuition.
So look at what the Pesach Choshen writes about Minog. And this is true for babysitting. Let's say somebody hires you to be a babysitter, and they don't agree, you don't come to a number about how much you could take per hour. How much are you entitled to?
Regular.
Whatever the going rate is for that type of service. Look at the Pesach Choshen writes
that makes
here.
Sense for,
look what he writes.
He
says,
when you're taking a job on like that, you don't really know how much you're getting.
Look what he says. He says, Im yesh dirug miktzoi, notin lefi hadirug. Right? So if there's like different. Dirug is like a level. Madriga. Right? So if you're like a 12th grader babysitting, you get paid more than an 8th grader babysitting, right? So whatever the custom is fact sensitive to your qualifications. Sounds reasonable, right?
Experience.
Yeah. Okay. Same, the Pesach Choshen says, let's say you know that this Poel always gets paid more because he's an expert. And maybe the minhag gets bumped up a little bit for him. So, you know, it doesn't have to be so generic. It can be as narrowly tailored as possible to the specifics of these parties. Okay? So that's kind of the direction that we went in. We said, there's no agreement on price. There is a contract. We got to fill in minhag. So what's minhag? Right? So one guy said, we should go around to the yeshivas in Israel. And we should figure out what's the average going tuition rate for yeshiva.
Well, which Americans are there?
So this is an American yeshiva.
Catering price is probably accurate. Like,
well,
their price is probably accurate in that
order. Which price?
$20,000. Probably the $20,000.
So there's a whole shiloh. Is it the sticker price? Is it the average sticker price? Is it the average?
If I give a 50% scholarship the first time around, that proves it.
What's a sticker price?
Like,
sticker price is how much they're asking.
This is how much worth, but it's really worth whatever we look at. Like, that was seemingly the case on Olive.
So you think it's not the sticker price?
Well, Sean, they could have went only down to a couple $1,000 primarily because Sean Olive, it didn't really work out. And says, like,
okay, one second. So I'll just say it was a huge, there's no clean way of figuring out what the average going rate for yeshivas in Israel was. This Diane started doing a little ad hoc research. It's a terrible thing to do.
There's also
the yeshivas are just like, you know, there's no clean cut rule about how much we charge.
And
you know, for somebody who needs Yeah, the price changes based off our finances. It depends on the student. You know, it depends. Well,
you're not comparing it relevant.
Right, which yeshivas are the relevant yeshivas to compare it to?
Charge the same price he was charged last year. So
oh, so I want to get to that in a second. I want to get to that in a second.
But if he needed, if the only way was through a contract, do you think there's no contract? Then why would the yeshiva keep the kid?
We think there is a contract.
Wait, but the father was arguing that there wasn't a contract.
Right, the father was saying there's no contract, so I don't know
why would the yeshiva keep the son in the yeshiva with the contract?
Maybe the yeshiva is being generous, right?
And they're assuming that they're not going to get paid for a whole
second. I was going to get paid.
I don't know. Does everybody hear the argument? So this Dayan was saying minug, and now you got to go and find out what the minug is in other yeshivas. But it turns out, it's very difficult to establish what that minug
can
is.
Can we say that the yeshiva assumed that there was a contract?
What?
Can we say that the yeshiva...
Who cares what the yeshiva is assuming? Yeshiva is just making claims. We're trying to figure out the law. Right? What the yeshiva thinks is not relevant. What matters is what was the objectively true legal description of their relationship. Yeah?
If you say that you want that shana bet, like, why can't we say that it's like the case of Shonar?
That he's agreeing to their price?
Yeah.
You could have said that. You could have said that he's... But the reason why it's not is because... The Pesach Koshen, I think, correctly. Because Nispasher Beinenu, I think it's not just that he doesn't have his own price. It's not just that he didn't counter.
Maybe his counter.
It's more that we believe there was kind of an acknowledgement of Nispasher Beinenu. Like, we both realize we have to work it out, which means that the prices that were suggested are not relevant. Right, exactly. It's different than the case where it's like, here are Israel's conditions, here are Hamas's conditions. And one side is going to agree to the other. That's different than a case where you're like, okay, we realize that your conditions are not acceptable, and you realize that our conditions are not acceptable. So we're gonna put our heads together to come up with new terms. And the point is that this yeshiva case is analogous to that of Nispash or Beninu, rather than Tosefta's case, where each side is kind of dug in and committed to their own number. Yeah, hold up one second. Okay? Does everybody see how it's difficult to pull up a number?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I want to point out that I think that's an important thing in Dine Torah also, that as Dayanim, like, you don't want to make up a number. Because you want the decision to be grounded in something as objective as possible. Right? So, like, which yeshivas did you ask for the average tuition? Which yeshivas are analogous to this yeshiva? There's a lot of speculation there. All these yeshivas that we asked were telling us, or that this Dayan was asking, were saying there is no hard and fixed rule about how much we charge for tuition. It depends on the year, it depends on our finances.
Well, they don't have an official tuition.
They have an official number they ask for, but it's not uniform what people actually pay. Right? So what should we do in that case? Right?
Averages.
You could, but then you're guesstimating, right? So it's like kind of arbitrary. Which yeshivas did you ask? And the yeshivas themselves are saying we don't have a hard and fixed number.
Could you have looked at the different yeshivas he applied to?
Yeah, but there's a lot of guesswork. There's a lot of guesswork in all of that, right? So I had a chiddush. What was the chiddush? Chiddush was based off this pesach of the Shulchan Aruch. You guys will tell me what you think about it. So Shulchan Aruch and Shin Lamed Gimel Ches and Choshe Mishpat. A case involving a Shliach Tzibur. All good litigation in the times of the Rishonim involved Shliach Tzibur against the community. Everyone was suing their chazan in the times of the Rishonim. Good stuff. Shliach Tzibur Shehizkir Atzmo Manhige Yir Lashana B'Tznai Kach V'Kach. So you have a chazan who was hired under certain conditions, with certain conditions, certain benefits, certain compensation package. But then he gets rehired for a second year without specifying certain terms, without specifying the exact terms. What do we say?
But it's still not our case.
One second. What's the psak of the Shulchan Aruch?
Based on the first year.
Previous year.
Yeah, you assume that the terms of the previous year should get carried over to the second year. Okay, let's say maybe the salary of the first year should carry over to the second year, the tax exemption of the first year should carry over.
Better than to ask for 20,000
second. Well, 1 second. 1 second. Here it's a little.
I guess in a case that they didn't agree on something for the second year, they just said come back.
Say it again?
This case.
Correct.
Is the case that they just brought back without any,
correct.
Without any discussion.
In which case?
When you just read.
No. V'achar kach hiskir atzmo levnei ayir azos iman higim shniyim. Right?
Below
hisnei. Meaning he didn't make a stipulation about the tax benefit. He didn't make a stipulation about the...
So they have a different agreement?
Yeah, no, you notice the first year was b'tznai kach v'kach.
Yes, correct.
And the second year he didn't make any tznayim. So the first year he said, I want a house and I want a tax exemption and I want a car. And then the second year he's like, okay, I want to be rehired. And they say, yes, you're rehired.
So
the question is,
salary.
Do you assume that he gets rehired with all those benefits? And the Pesach HaShulchan Aruch is yes. You roll over all the Tanayim from year one into year number two. Unless they're negotiated out or, right? So what does that suggest? Looking at the Piskei Choshen, commenting on a similar type of, basically posting this idea. Sochor l'zman kotzu b'kach b'kach. Ulaachar azman hiskimu laharech azman v'lo pasku askar nosin lo kifi apsika rishona. If you kind of extend the contract without specifying terms, you assume it has the same terms as the prior contract. That's this case of Shulchan Aruch. So what does that suggest for this case?
The first case.
Well, for the case of the Beis Din. So how do you define it? How would you think about it?
No, but they specified a price that they just didn't agree upon.
Okay. Okay, so, but remember that it's true the yeshiva tried to specify a different price. But halachically speaking, if there was no agreement on it, it's as if they weren't posig. But as if they didn't. The language was, it was kilo his new cloth.
But that doesn't, that's mashma that they could just go based on. That's mashma that the father just goes based on the first year.
Right, halakhically speaking, if they didn't succeed in negotiating a new price for Shana Bet, it seems like there's at least a good case to be made that you default back onto the price for the previous year. No?
So my
argument here, let's go, we'll get that in a second, was we don't know what the minog is of other yeshivas. It's hard to establish what's the minog about how much people pay for yeshiva in Israel. But we do know, because all the yeshivas were telling us it depends on the facts, and it depends on the year, and it depends on the kid. But we do know exactly what the father was liable to pay for the prior year.
But he didn't pay that either.
So 1 second. Now in halacha, we know that sometimes that's the psak of the Shulchan Aruch and the Siman Shana Megimel. In halacha, we do go after the prior year's number. Right?
Yeah.
So I said, maybe we should apply that number to this case. And what's the theory for it? The theory is that, why are you going to Minog in general?
There's no
if there's no clear-cut agreement, the most reasonable thing to say is you're going to do what everyone else does. So you hire a babysitter. You don't say how much you're going to pay the guy. The most reasonable thing to impute to the agreement is what's normal, whatever everyone else does. So here, when you don't know what everybody else does, what's the most reasonable thing to impute to the agreement? Exactly what these two people did 12 months earlier.
Just agree upon something.
What?
Which is agreed upon.
Even if the price changes,
just go back to the old price.
I mean, you go back to the old price.
Correct.
Right. So we know exactly what... So for example, if I hired you as a babysitter Monday night for $20 an hour, and then I say, can I hire you Tuesday night? And I don't specify how much I'm paying you. What is it reasonable to assume? Right. So same thing over here. Based on this Pesach and the Shulchan Aruch, it seems reasonable that the right minhag to impute to this agreement is exactly what these two parties agreed upon 12 months earlier. So what does that come out to?
$10,000.
How much was it?
$12,000.
I think exactly $12,000.
And he paid like six, no?
So I don't think it matters how much the father actually paid. Because you're trying to figure out what was the amount they agreed to. Right? What was the amount of liability that the father has? What was the amount of the value of the contract for the year tuition?
Don't things usually go up year after year?
Oh, so I want to get to that in a second. One second.
Well,
Sean, good. So one second. So I want to say, so I thought this is the right way to go, is to, you go for the prior year tuition amount, $12,000. What was actually agreed upon? Not you don't apply the scholarship rate. You don't apply how much the father actually paid. You apply the amount that was the legally binding agreement for Shana Aleph. What's nice about that? Notice how there's no guesswork.
It's
$12,000. You know exactly the number they themselves agreed to. You don't have to start looking now to what other yeshivas do and trying to guess which yeshivas are the right sample set.
The nice thing was the dad even said the program was just a repeat of Shana Aleph.
Yeah, that also works out very nicely for this type of... right. The whole claim is that there's nothing different about Shana Bet. So that's true. Now, this was my suggestion. And one of the Dayanim said, it's a bad suggestion. Bad suggestion.
Yeah, but he also said your red in the beginning.
Same right. So, right.
Like
that's true. He said bad suggestion. Two reasons. Number one, he said the language of the Shulchan Aruch is when you don't have an agreement, you go to Minag HaMedina. Minag HaMedina means a Minag of what other people are doing, not a Minag of what these guys did. But I just said Minag HaMedina is a general term, right? And it's when you don't have a prior agreement between these two people, then you go to Minag HaMedina. But if you have a clear-cut agreement between these two people, the whole point of this Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch and the Shin Lamed Gimel Sifches with the Chazan is that you go, the prior year is a more secure thing to rely upon. So better to have a Vada al Tanaya Rishon Hiskir Asmo, that's a better minug, a minug that obtained between these two people, than a minug of what other people do in the marketplace. Reasonable, Yosef?
So,
well?
If you would
well,
have, yes.
Yes?
It's kind of like the rest of your word, like some case very literal versus some trying.
Exactly, right. He's going very literal on the language.
I kind of know.
Well, I don't think you know it is. I don't think so.
When, according to Minag HaMedina, what would the Pesach be?
I said that's the, we don't know. Because then you have to start guessing what other, these other yeshivas...
Like, oh, but the Pesach would be he has to pay something.
Yeah, it would be like, oh, what's average? What's the average going
okay.
rate for yeshiva in Israel? Is it 20,000?
Because the yeshivas in Israel and the guys in America, so it's like
no.
Two different Medinas.
No,
so
no, 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 no. The Medina, Minag HaMedina is like the Minag of people sending their kids to yeshiva in Israel.
Okay.
Then he has done this. He has a second taina. What's a second taina? I'm gonna go sober him. He says, "Look, yeshiva Shana Bet is always
cheaper.
Very good, Toby. Shana Bet is always cheaper than Shana Aleph.
So you can apply the discount rate.
What?
Well,
so he says, fine. We'll go with your mahalach that you apply the. You know, you charge $12,000 from the Shana." But Shana Bet's always cheaper than Shana Aleph. So you should give some sort of discount to the father for Shana Bet. So you discount it by some nominal, you know, 5%, 3%.
Because
well, that's the minimum.
Why don't you just
put
it
in the prices that she usually charges for Shana Aleph, Shana Bet, 50% of that.
Right, so we were saying, look, that for Shana Aleph, they were asking, their sticker price was 24. For Shana Bet, their sticker price was 22.
So maybe you could just calculate that.
But my response to that was, number one, remember, in this case, they were actually asking for more for Shana Bet. Because remember, they gave $12,000 for Shana Aleph, they asked,
no,
and they wanted $20,000 for Shana Bet.
No, so that's why you take that percentage off what they would usually discount. Meaning for Shana Aleph,
they
gave him 50% off of $24,000, so doing 50% off of $22,000, call it $11,000.
So yeah, but maybe the Yeshiva doesn't have as much as what $20,000
did. Right. That's what I was saying also.
But the whole point is that you go back on.
So I didn't like this approach because there's also a lot of guesswork. How much are you going to discount it?
Also, the thing is that, yes, it's cheaper being able to discount for Shana Bet, but it's cheaper than the full Shana Aleph price. He wasn't paying the full Shana Aleph price.
Correct. One of my arguments was...
That principle doesn't...
Right, so my argument was, take the guy who gets the best scholarship for Shana Aleph. He pays zero tuition. Does the yeshiva then pay him to go Shana Bet? Right? Obviously not, right? The point is that, like, they're... Like, it's a case... You know, it's true that usually the yeshivas charge less for Shana Bet, but this is an exceptional case. Like, this, they're clearly asking for more for Shana Bet. They gave an amazing discount for Shana Aleph. But more importantly, conceptually speaking, my argument was that this Dayan was conflating Minhag HaMedina with Minhag of the prior year. Meaning, once you go with the Mahalach that you're going to apply the rate of the prior year, you don't also apply the Minhag HaMedina to discount Shanabet. You have an either or option, right? Are you going to go with the Shulchan Aruch and Simen Shin Lamed Gimel?
What's the issue?
Well,
what's the issue?
That it's only when you're applying Minhag HaMedina is it relevant to say, okay, normally you discount it further. But if you're going with the Minhag of the prior year between these parties, then you shouldn't also factor in Minhag HaMedina as a separate consideration. Right? Either you're in Shin Lamed Aleph, which is Minhag HaMedina, or you're in Shin Lamed Gimel, which is Vade Al Tanai Rishon Hishkir Atma. His suggestion is basically to mix the two. We're going to apply the prior year, which is Shin Lamed Gimel, but with a little mix of Shin Lamed Aleph, which is conceding to the Minhag HaMedina to discount it somewhat. Right? And my point is, like, you don't have to do that. If you're applying Shin Lamed Gimel, then you apply the prior year amount. You don't further reduce it in consideration of Minhag HaMedina. There's different legal principles. You don't mix and match that.
Well, they could mix and match, though. Like, I don't know, let's say God.
Let me give you the raya. You want to hear my raya? Okay. I stumbled across this raya. But let's take a look at it. So this is the Tshuva the Ribash, which is the source of the Shulchan Aruch Tzak about in the Chazan case that you just applied the amount from the previous year. So Shuva Ribash Shem in Tafayin He. He quotes in his discussion a Tshuva Rav Haigon about Schiras Batin. What's Schiras Batin? Renting houses. So Saul, you want to read the Rav Haigon quoted in the Tshuva the Ribash? And this gets paskin, by the way, in the Shulchan Aruch. So read it for us.
The Kirosh Ketav Rav Haigon on Zav Tshuva Shamaskir Bayit Bechabelo Lashana Lesach Yerua Ve'amad Sham Yoter Shelo Chayav Lefloa Mima She'amad
Okay, so you have a tenant who stays there for a year, right? And then he stays on beyond the year. And the agreement was only for 1 year. So in your leases, you probably have holdover tenant clauses where they give you a knas for staying past your lease, like well beyond what the lease itself is. But this is a case where you had an agreement, let's say, $3,000 a month for 12 months. For your apartment. The 12 months are over, and you stay in the apartment. But there's no penalty for staying over. How much are you now obligated to pay for month 13, month 14, month 15, etc.?
You stay in the apartment without the guy letting you?
Well,
like
he didn't say anything. He didn't give you trouble. He didn't try to kick you out.
You still have the benefit.
Well,
you
got the benefit. How much do you have to pay? So what does it say? Amad Jam Yoser, Shaino Chayv Lefura, Masha Amad Ella. You pay Sach Hashana Harishona. What does that mean? Well, you pay the same amount as the year prior, which is this is the Ribash about applying the real year's price. But notice, V'afal Pi, even though the rental market went up. So this is a great example where if you were going for the Minhag HaMedina, they'd say, okay, year number two, let's look to see externally what are people doing in the marketplace. And of course, Hukar Schiras Batin, the rent prices went up. But here, what the Ribash is telling you, that you exclusively take what? The prior year, and you apply that rather than looking externally to Minhag HaMedina. So I thought this is a very solid raya, which I stumbled on by accident. It was like Ashkacha Pratis. Well, no, before we finalized the Pesach, but like while we were negotiating this, I was kind of looking around at all these like cases. I was like, oh, it's right here in the Rav Haigon. Right? I think the point here is that Sach Hashana Rishona is a more stable, it's a more firm, it's a better minug than looking to what other people outside of these two parties do, right? Remember,
is that in this case, or is that like...
I think it's a good general rule, right? So I'm applying it to this case that we had. Right? So the thought is, yes, there's a minhag in general that Shana Bet is cheaper than Shana Aleph. But my point is that's not relevant when the relevant price is the minhag between these two people a year earlier. Right? And that's what's going on in the tshuva of Rav Haigon, where he's saying, if you stayed on past your lease, the lease amount continues, because that's what you agreed upon 12 months earlier, even though the minhag in the market is to raise the rent for a second year. Like, their general rental market has gone up for the second year. So you don't say, oh, let's give you an average rent amount for this Shana Bet of the Sekiros. So you know, you apply the same amount for Shana Aleph. So I think that's a raya that a minhag...
That's what
we pass again. That's what we pass again. Yeah. So you pass again $12,000 for Shana Bet.
Did he pay?
Did he pay? So we don't... We just issue the decision. The decision's enforceable.
Enforceable by courts?
It may be that the yeshiva has a lien against the guy's house if he didn't pay. Yeah, it's enforceable in the courts. But notice, it's like a very nice... So I think it's a very nice psak. Number one, halachically, it's like very well-grounded. You can see like this idea. So you get this very nice analysis, right? Is it Yorid? So we rejected Yorid. Is it like the Tosefta case where each side has a number?
Somebody brought up the
Tosefta. I kind of just brought up the Tosefta. Or is it like Minhag HaMedina? Or is it the prior year amount? So you have four different considerations, but conceptually, they're very different. The idea of Yorid is the idea that there's no contract. And then you're entitled to compensation for conferring benefits. We rejected that. The idea of the Tosefta is that there's a contract, the exact opposite extreme. There's a contract and an agreement on price in the contract. An agreement on price because when you turned around, you're deemed to have accepted the number that the other party offered, right? So when the yeshiva said 20K, the father is deemed to have accepted that when he put his kid on the plane. But we rejected that because we thought that's not the facts of the case. The facts of the case are that the father said nispash or beinenu. So we see how those are opposite principles. One is to say no contract, yorid, and the opposite is to say yes contract and the father agreed to the yeshiva's price at some point. We rejected both of those extremes. So we said it is a contract, but there was no agreement on price. What do you do when there's no contract and you have no agreement? What do you do when there is a contract but no agreement?
Last
year. So, minhag. But we had two different minhags before us. Right? There's the minhag of what other people do, and then there's the minhag of the past practice of these parties. Right? So number one, it was very hard to establish what is the minhag of Medina, because there was no fixed amount between the yeshivas themselves said there's no rule about how much they charge.
It is like an easiest.
One second. And it would be an inelegant number. Like, where do you pull that number?
It's always going to be like that.
Right.
Like, we're babysitters. How are you going to figure out, you know?
Right. But you could say if most people in your grade charge this amount, it's a little cleaner.
Yeah.
Right? If you have a clear-cut minhag. But here, we thought the minhag between the parties, so the minhag of that shuba, the rebush, and... Shin Lamed Gimel and the Rav Haigon is the right way to go. How do you know that you don't mix and match the prior year with the Minhag B'nei HaYir to discount Shana Bet? So that's the tshuva of Rav Haigon, which is a nice raya.
That even if it goes up in price.
That even if the price goes up, you really just go to the previous year.
What's the reason for that?
I think the rationale is that when you're trying to figure out, either there are two options of why Minhag should matter. One is you're trying to figure out what these people intended. And if they didn't put it in, you have to figure out what's the most reasonable thing that they intended. So it could be the thing they did yesterday or 12 months ago. They just thought that. Or they're intending what everyone else is intending. Right? So and you should figure out what's a closer intention. What's more reasonable? What's more likely that they intended? What they just did or what other people normally do?
What was the decision in the end?
Alternatively, you might say it's not about what do we think they intended. It's just a legal rule. It's like a hanhaga that if they didn't put in a price, we have to put in a price. And then we're trying to figure out what's the most reasonable price, what's the fairest price to put in. And the argument is that the fairer price is the thing that's closest to them. And what's closer to them is whatever what they themselves did last year rather than what everybody else does this year. That's the logic. So what do we do in the end? So we did $12,000 for Shana Bet, because that's exactly what the father's on the hook for Shana Aleph. And we ordered him to pay also the $6,000 that he was in arrears for Shana Aleph, which he still owes to the yeshiva.
Well, was that bumming out after the decision?
We don't make the decision on the spot. We send it out in the mail. So we don't see the decision.
You know,
but it's very fair. I mean, he sent his kid to yeshiva, and he got full benefits of yeshiva education for his son.
So do you think the yeshiva would actually, if he didn't pay, would actually give him a discount
to
enforce it?
Yeah, for sure.
Really?
To enforce the arbitration decision, 100%. Yeah, because yeshiva needed the money also. They're not being mean. They're entitled to be paid for their services. Okay, so does everybody see? I want you to walk away from this. Not obviously, it's an interesting case, interesting decision halakhically and even aesthetically. Like the idea that if you want to have good basis for your numbers, but I want you to walk away with the principle of your raid. That's one major principle that comes out of this. Number two, the principle of that contracts happen and are executed all the time. Agreements are executed without a meeting of the minds on the price. And you see, the halacha has these different tools for trying to insert a price. One tool could be minhag b'nei medina. Another tool could be what did these guys do the prior year. Another tool could be this tosefta type example, or what was the last offer on the table.
Does this happen a lot?
All the time.
Take,
I don't know about the yeshivas, but I'm saying, but this type of thing where there's a contract without a clear meeting of the minds on some of the details of it. And then you go to minhag to fill those in. Any thoughts on this case? Good case?
You said you had a case this week?
Yeah, I'll hear about the case this week in a second. But any thoughts on this case before move on?
How did this go in the end?
What?
How did this case end in the end? Like, how did it end in the end?
Okay, we just said. What do you mean?
I missed it.
Sorry. Yeah, it's all a problem.
So they charged him to based on this Rav Haig on that the Ribash quoted. They charged him to pay $12,000 based on because even though the Shana.
That's what you said.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, he applied the prior year amount. Yeah. You just like short circuited.
$12,000 plus the $6,000.
Oh, plus six.
Yeah, plus what he owes from the first year, which makes sense. Right. Now look, equitably, bear in mind that the yeshiva also could have refused to take the kid before he signed the agreement.
Right.
So a little bit is on the yeshiva. It's a little bit on the yeshiva. Like, yeah, sure, they could have insisted we're not letting the kid come until you sign for 20K.
There's a lot of negligence there. That's why I feel like it's
right.
So questionable to begin with.
Well, these things aren't supposed to be so clear-cut. Like, I don't know, I think...
You think our decision is too clear cut?
No, I think it's a good decision.
But your decision
it's a good decision, right?
Good decision.
I think it's a good. I'm very proud of this decision. I think it's the right decision.
The yeshiva, I'm saying like
it's good halacha, good thought, good like trying to weigh the different principles against each other. What's that, Gavin?
I'm saying it's not like where these cases come up, where like the contract isn't so clear cut, is usually a more casual thing, like going to yeshiva.
No, even another. There are a lot of cases where it's even in like more complex things.
Yeah, like if someone's working for somebody.
Why don't you just stay quiet?
You also just mute your computer and it'll stop talking.
Oh,
whose computer is that?
It's
my
hotspot reset
because
control enter.
Someone's working for somebody.
Maybe somebody hacked into it and is.
Numerically speaking, I think the answer to the point about asking is yes, but does your situation, does that account for the negligence of the yeshiva? But taking into account that they're just completely stupid?
Well, I think the thought is, like, you might say, well, the yeshiva should get 20K, right? Because they were asking for 20K. Right, and we were okay. We wrote in our decision even, like, we're okay knocking it down to 12 because the yeshiva was negligent.
Okay, yeah.
Right, like they had every right to say we're not going to let the kid come until we have the father's signature that he's going to pay 20K. They failed to do it. And we added, by the way, you knew the father couldn't pay because he didn't pay for Shana Aleph in the full amount yet. So it was on you. You should have been more diligent for
what
Shana
would happen in an American case, like if there's an American court.
Yeah, that's a good question. So that's an interesting question.
I mean, Shana Bet probably doesn't even come with it. That would be dismissed, though.
I don't know.
Completely, like, you didn't sign a contract.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think they would have, like, the idea of quantum merit, you know,
Also, does precedent exist in Jewish law?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's like, what we look to the Rishonim all the time, right? That's the thing. We're looking here. Look at this case. We're looking to the Pesach Kosha and looking to the Chivas. Chivas or Paigon. What?
It's like,
precedents of basis.
Like, these types of cases in regards to basis probably happen all the time. Like, people not paying for yeshiva.
Oh, sure, yeah. 100%. I'd say they're hard. They're hardest when it's, like, your first time dealing with it. Then they get easier once you have similar fact patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I think it's also really nice. Like, you learn these sugyas in yeshiva. You should learn yored. Like, when you see them, like, how they're used to solve a case. Yeah, you're like, oh, it's such a good system. Right? Like, look, here you could take, like, these kind of just theoretical principles, and they give you very elegant resolutions to cases. Like, you can see how they work to solve problems in the real world. Yeah.
Can I have a question about your method, but it doesn't do this case?
Yeah, let me just say, any questions about this case, or we're good, Leo?
So, why is it that, I mean, you're saying the precedent of what he paid, but he paid the discount, meaning why should that discount carry over?
Because it's the precedent.
What are you saying? What do you mean?
Meaning the precedent, meaning the discount. Shana'al? Right, Shana'al.
He paid 12K.
What?
Shana Halfi paid. He was on the hook for 12. The agreement was for 12K.
Right, but that was agreed upon. Like normally, right? It's what was it 20, 22?
What the issue was asking for for Shana Halfi 24 with 50% discount.
Right. So wouldn't he be expected to pay the like on the hook for 24 because the discount is what?
No, our thought. We went back and forth a little bit about this. Like, is it the discount amount? Is it is it the scholarship amount? Is it the actual? But the thought is that, like,
I'm saying, why is it the discount amount over the regular amount?
So our thought was that what the yeshiva asks for, when YU says we're charging 60K, but let's say they give 3/4 of applicants some sort of scholarship, let's say. Then the 60K is just an opening bid in negotiations. It's not what the actual, like, it's not what the actual tuition contract is. So when the yeshiva said 24K per Shana Aleph, that's just their opening bid. Everything is subject to negotiation.
Right, so meaning the discount
isn't an exception. Correct, exactly. Because the discount, that's just an accounting thing about how they ended up getting to their number. But the bona fide contract between the parties for Shana Aleph was 12K worth. That's the... But another thing, again, other than the legal principles here, the thing that I thought was nice about this psak is that you don't have, like, guesswork in the number. Like, we know where the 12K comes from, right? The amount that the parties themselves agree to. So there's this aesthetic dimension where the number is very compelling in and of itself. Yeah?
Would the case change if yeshiva offered a discount that was more significant than $12,000? Like if they offered Shana Bet for $10,000 and the father still said that we'd have to agree on it?
It's interesting. So let's say the yeshiva said we want 10K for Shana Bet.
Right.
Would we still say 12K?
Yeah.
I think so. Well, it's an interesting question. How much would the yeshiva be suing for in your case? Would the yeshiva be suing for 12K for Shana Bet, or would they be
still saying for the 22 K because that's a full price of what Shana Bet should be?
Okay, so then, yeah, I think the yeshiva would still get 12K, even if they made an offer for 10. Yeah, because remember the formal principle at work here is that. If you didn't agree on a number, right, then it's as if there's no Heskem on a number, and in which case you go to Minhag. And what's the Minhag? What they did the prior year. So even if the yeshiva was willing to go down to 10 in their original negotiations for Shana Bet, the fact that it would be the father's loss. Right? It was the father loses out because he didn't sign that 10K deal, and now he's going to be on the hook for 12K. There's a separate issue, which is interesting. Can a Bezdin award more than the party is asking for? That's a very interesting question that comes in the first paragraph of Basra. Let's say the yeshiva was saying, we want 10K for Shana Bet, because that was the amount we were asking for in our last negotiation. Could we as a Bezdin step in here and say, oh, you're entitled to 12K? Because if he never signed for 10, then you're entitled to... That's a machlokes aposkin. And that's like a very interesting conceptual question about the role, and moral question about the role of the Bezdin, Like, why should we create a? Why should we make the scope of the conflict larger than it actually is? So if the yeshiva is asking for 10, and the father's saying 0, why should we give the yeshiva 12? Right? Like, we're just widening the dispute. And you might say the role of a bezin is to minimize disputes, not to widen them. So that's the view of some poskim, that you should never give more than the party's asking for.
Can't you minimize it if you're saying, like, let's say the person who's claiming a lot, like a lot of money, but really, sorry, let's say the person's claiming half, but they really, another person doesn't want to pay at all, or wants to pay like a lesser amount, and then basically says, hey, this person could be asking for more, but they're not. You should take what they're asking. Is that like?
It's like a pshara type thing, you know, like, oh, you should accept this.
Right. So if anything, they're minimizing what's their thing.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened?
That was to give you the fact pattern again. So,
a person is claiming, let's say, $10,000.
Yeah.
And the person's like, no, I would only give you max $8,000. And the business says, hey, really, he's entitled to $12,000.
Could we do that in a hearing? So it depends on this issue, because number one, I'm saying it's machlokas haposkim, whether you could ever award more than the party is asking in relief.
Right.
So the Tovea is suing for 10, it's machlokas haposkim whether the Bezin could ever award 12.
So in this case, they wouldn't be awarding 12. They would just say, hey, he's a very good case for 12.
Right. Take 10.
We'll award you 10. That's
yeah.
what they're asking.
That's the sugya in Bava Basra in the first parak, where there's a dispute about Makif and Nika, and one of the Amorim says, like, take what he's offering you, because or else you're going to be, because really you're on the hook for more.
Yeah.
Which is exactly
but
your case.
But then the other guy's going to be like, oh, the offer's off the table from him.
Sometimes they're just happy to have it done with, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the same time, what if Shunabet is a different program? And then you're not necessarily creating
a fail. So I actually don't think that it depends here on the failure of the Shonabet program. I think even if the Shonabet program was very robust and very different from Shonalev, it's still a similar type of contract between the two parties, right? So given that there's no clear-cut separate minhag for Shonabet, I would still think like the right amount is to pick the Shonalev amount. But I hear you. It makes my case easier that the Shonabet was a failure, right? And the father's whole claim was that it's just a repeat of Shonalev, which strengthens the yeshiva's position. What?
Rav
Haigon, correct.
Well, it strengthens the father's opinion.
Why?
The father didn't want to pay anything.
No, but I'm saying the Shonabet is like a good Shonabet, it would make him have to pay more. Shonabet's just a repeat of Shonalev. It's like somebody cutting.
But you should still pay Shonalev, no?
No, but I'm saying it's like somebody cutting your grass.
Right.
You're
supposed to be learning
twice
yeah.
on the same day.
That's I don't know what Yosef thinks Shonabet is, you know? In Shonalev, he was playing Nintendo.
Right.
And Shonabet, he was on your prime.
Yeah, but it's
no, you should be playing Nintendo. No, you should be learning your prime in both, right? Like, I actually don't think Shonabet should be so different from Shonalev. Like, you know, what does that even look like? Right. All right, so we'll stop here for today, guys. Great discussion.